Chapter 27. Commands. Luminara breathes, horror so thick she can hardly breathe through it. They encoded commands into every trooper. Adi looks as grim as Luminara has ever seen her, and about as shaken. She folds her arms across her chest, tight, like she's looking for comfort, and closes her eyes. Well, she says, flat, though her tone can't quite hide the edges to her voice. Agen found out what the chips are for. Sifo Dyas wouldn't have done this, Luminara says, but it's more a plea than a belief. She curls her hands together tightly, trying to even out her breathing, trying to understand, release, advance, but control is almost impossible to find, in light of the files the Medroid sent them. We wouldn't, Oddball says, fierce, but his voice cracks. Nalase's files are spread out in the air between them, the careful detailing of the biochips, their purpose, their effect. Luminara doesn't want to think of how the cloners know, how many clones they must have tested the order on to be sure it worked correctly. A tangle of fury and grief surges, ready to swamp her. And without looking at her, Adi takes one step over, drags Luminara to her side, and curls an arm around her. It's not right for a Jedi Master to be so out of control, but Luminara buries her face in Adi's robes, feels the shake of Adi's breath against her temple. She closes her eyes, curling her fingers into familiar, rough brown cloth, and tries to marshal herself. Sir, Oddball says, and it has more in common with a prayer than anything. We wouldn't. No brother would ever hurt the Jedi. Of course that's his concern. Of course. It would be Grease, too, if he were here. Luminara wants to laugh, but if she does, there's every chance she'll cry, too. We know that, Adi says, and the only sign of her distress is the press of her fingertips into Luminara's back, just a little too hard. That's not our main concern, Oddball. It overwrites you, Luminara says, and drags control back by her fingertips. Turns away from Adi to face Oddball across the table, and the fear on his face makes something settle, steely, along her spine. Oddball, if this order is used, the clones disappear. It's worse than slavery. You'll lose everything, all of yourself, just because of a chip. That is our greatest concern. We can't see you destroyed like that. Oddball looks at her, at the files. Back to factory settings, he says, black humor in his voice. Takes a breath, then sinks down into one of the chairs, twisting his fingers into his hair. We wouldn't. Adi sighs, soft, sad. She rounds the table to curl a hand over the back of his neck and says gently, We all know that, Oddball. You and your brothers have saved our lives more times than anyone can count. But someone has a direct path into our heads, Oddball says sharply. Someone doesn't care that we serve together. They give us one order and we're going to think that all of you are traitors. We need to execute. His voice cracks again and he looks up at Adi. General, if we were flying and someone activated that, we'd shoot you down. We wouldn't even realize that we shouldn't. It wouldn't even be us at that point. Yes, Luminara says, soft. A tragedy on many parts. You, Oddball closes his eyes. You give us your backs. You trust us. We guard younglings. We were made to serve the Jedi, to fight with you, and now we're meant to execute you? Sir, this is... He breaks off like he can't even find the words. Horrific, Adi finishes for him. grim, and glances at Luminara. "It has," Luminara says, with all the composure she can scrape together. "All the markings of the Sith Lord's plan." Adi scowls, but inclines her head. "I thought the same thing," she says. "We need to get them out," Oddball says. "All the chips, from every trooper. Then it doesn't matter worth a criff what that bastard wants."
"There are too many," Luminara says, and it twists, horrific, in her stomach. "But it's logic. We can't put every trooper in the guard down for intensive brain surgery. Not only would the engineers of this plot notice immediately, and likely activate the order early, but the separatists would overrun us. We're barely holding as it is." She presses her fingers to the edge of the desk, focusing, and says, "There must be a way to deactivate them. On Kamino, perhaps. If they could put the chips in place, there must be a way to turn them off."
"Egan and Chuck wouldn't have time to look over these files," Adi says, and her mouth tightens. "We can't trust this information over a comm, either. One of us is going to have to tell them in person." Luminara exchanges glances with her, torn, wants to volunteer immediately, but Barriss is here, and all of her men, and as her recent fight with Ventress proved, she's better fighting as half of a whole rather than alone. As much as she wants to head straight for Kamino and solve this problem, she knows her abilities and how far they extend. Besides, Adi is the better pilot between them.
"Go, Adi," she says firmly. "I'll oversee things here and continue the testing. Shock and Egan could use your help."
Adi doesn't hesitate. She nods, sharp, and says, "Oddball, will you come?" "You want me to?" Oddball asks, disbelieving. "After all this?" Adi's smile is crooked.
"After you saved my life?" she asks, raising a brow at him. "Of course. I always feel better having you at my back."
Oddball's expression twists, but he nods. "I'll round up the men," he says roughly, and pushes to his feet. Pauses there, swallows, and says, "If you hadn't found this, General..."
"Shock and Egan receive the credit here," Luminara says, wry.
She smooths an edge of hair back under her headpiece, takes a breath. Can't imagine what led Shock to this discovery, but she's deeply, desperately grateful nonetheless.
"Adi, may the Force be with you."
Adi snorts. "I think finding this has proved it is," she says. Then inclines her head to Luminara and sweeps out of the room, moving quickly. Oddball hesitates, looking after her, and then glances at Luminara. "You be careful too, General," he says. "Maybe stick close to Commander Gree for a bit. He put men on Commander Offee, and he can't exactly assign men to you, but I think he'd want to." Luminara considers objecting, weighs the flare of indignation against logic. She learned much the same lesson against Ventress, didn't she? Assistance is never a bad thing to accept.
"I will," she says. "Thank you, Oddball."
"Thank you, General." Oddball's smile is crooked, but he touches two fingers to his brow in quick salute and then takes off at a jog, following Adi. Luminara breathes in, smooths her headpiece back, collects herself, then takes a step forward. Decisively, she sends a message to the rest of the council, vague enough that an intercept won't matter, but alerting them to the fact that Adi is heading for Kamino. Then closes Nala Se's files and buries them in the depths of some of the more tedious council reports she's been working on. Anyone looking for them won't even know where to start. Then, head held high, she turns, leaves the office, and goes to find Gree. She's a woman of her word, after all. And given his knowledge of what's happening, it's far better for him to be protected as well. They can protect each other. It's what they've been doing since the war started, and it's not about to stop now.
"That doesn't look good," Cody says, mildly dismayed.
Mace, who was very much about to keep walking into what he thought was another illusion, stops short, looks suspicious, from the wide, depthless dark of the pool of water stretching out in front of them to the low ceiling of the tunnel, and grimaces. Even if he could see the far side, there wouldn't be nearly enough room for a force-assisted leap.
Not an illusion, I take it.
Cody leans down, picking up a pebble and tosses it out ahead of them, looking vaguely hopeful. Then, with a loud, echoing plop, the stone drops into the water, washing ripples back to the shore.
No, Cody says, resigned. Apparently not.
He sounds tired, Mace thinks. He hasn't spoken much as they've been walking. Not since the fight. But then, facing down a Jedi would be enough to unsettle anyone. He can feel the stir of Cody's thoughts, though he's carefully kept them separate. Can feel some sort of confusion, but isn't about to press. Some emotions are best handled without interference.
There's a path, he says, unless that's an illusion as well.
Cody turns, following his gaze, and frowns.
I see it, he agrees, and eyes the lake. It's pretty close to the water. Chances that something big is going to come out and try to eat us? From everything we've seen on this planet so far, Mace asks dryly. Hi.
He considers for a moment, then eyes the narrow lip of stone that runs along the edge of the lake and says,
at least it's not magma.
Cody snorts, some of the tension on his frame easing, if only slightly.
Yeah, he says. You know what? At this point, I'll take it. We're learning to count our blessings, Mace observes, bland. Maybe this honeymoon was good for something after all.
I don't think that two people who can't own anything need to learn that particular lesson, Cody says, and takes a step forward. The water ripples, out where he threw the stone, and something vast and dark surfaces. It's huge, huge enough that Mace can only catch pieces of it. But yellow blister traps glow along its back, long spines skim water around it, and a double set of red eyes blink open beneath the surface, glowing for half an instant before they close again. Then the thing sinks back beneath the surface, vanishing with a faint ripple of water, as soundless as a ghost.
Heck, Cody says, pale.
Mace isn't feeling all that much better himself.
Maybe, he says. We should avoid the water. I think that was a sea leviathan.
I've never been so happy to be ignored, Cody agrees, checks the lip of stone again, and asks,
we pass any branching paths?
Silently, Mace shakes his head.
Great, Cody says with a sigh. At least we don't have to take a boat across. One thing I admire about you, Cody, is your unfailing ability to look on the bright side of everything,
Mace says, only a little dry. Thankfully, Cody laughs a little.
No one would believe you if you told them, he says. Rex is the nice one. I'm the asshole. We're a perfect match.
Mace watches the water, looking for any ripples, and then says,
it should be safe enough, as long as we don't fall in.
Cody doesn't bother arguing. He steps up onto the ledge, having to turn sideways to keep his armor from scraping, and asks,
Jedi can kill these leviathans, right? Eventually, Mace allows, following him.
The stone is slick, treacherous, and he has to pay careful attention to his footing.
It takes large groups, usually. Their hide resists lightsabers at first, and their ability to drain life makes them tricky.
Tricky, Cody repeats, pained. Right, that's what I would call them, too. He pauses, then takes a breath and asks,
How are you feeling?
Fine, Mace says. And it's even true. We are getting farther from it. The pull is going away.
Relief flickers across Cody's face, and he nods. Good. We've gone up far enough that we have to be getting closer to the surface, too. There are fewer illusions to drag him into their grip, too. But those that Mace sees are subtler, more confusing. He keeps his eyes on the white of Cody's armor, in the glow of his lightsaber, not willing to give the Leviathan any more opportunities than he already has.
I think we might be under the Citadel.
Cody pauses, surprised, and glances back, like he's trying to judge how far they've come.
We have walked a ways, he agrees. If we beat Anakin into the Citadel after all of this, I'm going to laugh.
Unless Anakin got caught by something very distracting, Mace can't imagine he hasn't already made his way to the entrance at the very least. Of course, Anakin facing off against a Sith Lord is hardly the preferable outcome here, but with any luck, he's kept the safety of Kicks and Fives in mind and stayed hidden.
As long as nothing else beat him there, he says,
and Cody grimaces. Wouldn't you feel that? He asks. I know Obi-Wan can sometimes, when he's in trouble. Mace snorts.
Thankfully for my sanity, I've never had any sort of training bond with Anakin, he says dryly. It wouldn't work the same way for me.
Cody's brows furrow, and it's a reminder that, for all the clones were made for the Jedi, they know very little about them besides fighting styles. For the most part, Mace has found, they're more willing than the average Republic citizen to adjust to floating objects, precognition, and the agility of a lolthcat. But on the whole, they don't know about the Jedi as more than that. Mace has met some who take an interest and look into things on their own. Commander Havoc of the Rancor Battalion asked him for writings on the Jedi the last time they were stationed together. But most don't have the chance or the opportunity.
Masters and Padawans have a bond, he says in explanation. Mental, and usually deep. It aids in training and in making sure the Padawan won't be overwhelmed by the galaxy at large before they learn how to handle such things. Such bonds fade over time, but traces of them always linger.
Oh, Cody considers for a moment. So it's not just blind faith that makes Obi-Wan so sure Anakin is alive when he's in trouble, or Anakin sure that Ahsoka is alive. Mace considers how to phrase his answer. Explaining the Force to someone not sensitive to it has always felt inadequate when he tries. An exercise in frustration, like summing up half of himself in a handful of words.
No, he says slowly, and yes.
At Cody's sound of faint exasperation, he snorts.
The Force isn't a voice in our heads. It's knowing. It's a thought you can't let go, or an impulse you follow without thinking. We channel it, and it works through us. But it's very difficult to recognize immediately. Sometimes blind faith is just letting the Force guide us.
And sometimes it's someone being bullheaded? Cody asks, amused.
Frequently when Skywalker and Kenobi are involved,
Mace mutters. The water to the left of them ripples, and he feels Cody tense. Goes still. Pulls Cody back as tight against the wall as possible, and reaches out a hand, trying to feel for any minds close. There's one below them, large and hungry, and Mace veils their presence from it, mutes its sense of their heat, and makes it keep moving. This one isn't a Leviathan. It doesn't react to the touch of the Force, just keeps going. Mace breathes out slowly in relief.
It's gone, he says shortly.
Cody takes his hand again, pointed. I'd rather not have to jump in and save you from drowning if that Leviathan feeds you an image of a piece of solid ground, he says, for the record.
Mace snorts. Noted, he answers,
and follows when Cody starts moving again. So, there are Master Padawan bonds, Cody says. Any others? Is it a thing with Jedi?
Yes, Mace confirms, faintly amused. Jedi who are particularly close sometimes establish a mental connection, in friendship or brotherhood, or as a part of a romantic relationship. It's their own choice, but such things can be helpful on missions as well.
For a long moment, Cody is silent. Then, careful, he asks. It doesn't get to be too much? Always having someone else in your head?
No,
Mace says, quiet but certain. He couldn't imagine cutting his connection to Depa completely after all this time. Wouldn't have wanted to even when it was a new thing.
It's not that active, just a sense of someone. Like being able to see them out of the corner of your eye, no matter the distance between you.
With a soft snort, Cody tips his head. Like always having another clone around, he says. I'm sure I'll appreciate that more after it's not necessary.
Likely,
Mace agrees, wry. He glances out over the lake and says,
the end of the war will be a change for all of us.
There's a pause, and then Cody glances back, frowning. You sound like you think it will be a bad change, he says, careful. Mace looks out over the dark water, flickers of tired old worries curling in his chest. He's thought about this too much, but
the Jedi were never supposed to be soldiers, he says, but we let the Senate order us into war because there was no alternative. Now that it's been done, I fear for what our future will be. We can't remain peacekeepers when everyone only sees us as generals.
Cody doesn't answer for a long moment. Then, finally, he lets out a slow breath. The slant of his expression, something wry. And we were made to be soldiers and nothing else, he says. When the war's over, I don't know what's going to happen to us. The Jedi, at least, have the structure of thousands of years to fall back on, to cling to. The clones don't, and it makes Mace curl his fingers just a little more tightly into Cody's. And he says,
the Jedi won't abandon you. Any of you. As long as there's a place for the Jedi in the Republic, we'll fight to make a place for you and your brothers as well.
Cody isn't looking at him. His face is turned away, deliberate, but the line of his shoulders is tight in the violet darkness. I'm figuring that out, he says, just a little wry. You marrying me made it pretty clear how far you were willing to go.
It was you or Captain Rex,
Mace says, and after seeing Rex and Obi-Wan interact on the trip to Ord Radama, he can't imagine it would have ended well if they had tried to pull Rex into this.
Or Commander Colt. I have to say, I'm glad you were the one who agreed, Cody.
That gets him a quiet snort, but Cody still isn't looking at him. It was self-serving, he says, frank. Even if it didn't work to free all the other clones, I wanted to be free.
There's no shame in that, Mace says quietly. Even if it doesn't work and you're the only one it helps, that still makes it worth it.
Cody huffs a laugh, rough and sharp-edged. You Jedi are all crazy, he says. But it sounds almost like a compliment. Mace hums.
Would it surprise you that you are not the first person I've heard that from?
He asks. I'd be more surprised if I was, Cody retorts, and then says, six steps down, right in front of me. Mace minds its footing on the slick stone, but beyond the stairs, a much wider path opens out, enough to let them walk side by side again. Cody steps down. As soon as his foot hits the stone, light kindles. All along the tunnel, wrought metal lanterns flare to life in a rush of leaping sparks, sending light sweeping down to mark the path. The reflections shimmer on the surface of the lake, but they only manage to make the water seem darker, the press of shadows around them heavier. Still, its light. Mace hadn't realized how much he missed it. With a thought, he deactivates his lightsaber, clipping it to his belt, and glances around. The walls are smooth black stone, featureless, but it's clearly a path that's been used before. There's a wider half-circle of stone that juts out over the water, railed in except in one spot where it's been left deliberately open to the water beyond. And knowing the Sith, "What do you want to bet we're standing on an execution platform?" Cody asks grimly, clearly having the same thought. Mace crouches down, pressing a hand to the stone, and he might not have Quinlan's gifts, but even after 1,000 years, he can feel the echo of terror in the air here. "Nothing I'd care to lose," he says, and straightens. "We should keep moving." Cody is watching him, curious. "You can feel something?" he asks. "Even after so long?" Mace inclines his head. "Pain and fear fade slowly," he says, "especially when they've been imprinted into the Force. Jedi always feel such things." Cody winces faintly. "That why some planets give General Kenobi a headache the minute he sets foot on them?" "Tragedies will do that," Mace confirms. "Every Jedi has felt it at one point or another, and it's never pleasant." There's a pause, and then Cody breathes out, rueful. "I don't envy Fives getting tossed into all of this," he says. "No offense." Mace feels an answering flicker of amusement. "It's a gift like any other," he says. "There are drawbacks. But those who have it almost never have been without it, so it can be hard for us to judge that for ourselves." "Oh," Cody frowns just a little. "I guess I hadn't thought of that. Fives has always had some sense of it, then?" Mace nods. "He may not have known, but sensitivity to death, or to others' emotions, or a sense of what is about to happen, that's the Force." "Rex says he's got an uncanny knack for dodging incoming fire," Cody says thoughtfully. Pauses, then says, "I wonder how many other clones have the same knack." "Enough that we should have found them before," Mace says grimly. He starts down the wide walkway, Cody keeping pace, and tries not to consider how many doomed souls must have walked the same path over the centuries Koss City was inhabited. "You're finding them now," Cody says firmly. "That has to be enough." He glances ahead of them, considering, and then says, "Once we're away from the water, we should take a rest. It has to be almost morning on the surface, and you didn't sleep." The start of the night, facing Qui-Gon and seeing the ship, feels like it was days ago. The lack of sleep probably has something to do with that, Mace acknowledges wryly, and inclines his head in agreement. "An hour," he says. "If that ship leaves before we make it back..." "Getting to the ship won't matter if we kill ourselves doing it," Cody says bluntly. "The others will keep it from taking off if it comes to that." That, at least, is true. And if there's one thing Anakin is good at, it's causing chaos. Mace snorts, inclining his head. "All right." There's a pause, startled. "Well," Cody says after a moment, "that was more reasonable than I expected from a Jedi." "Not all of us are allergic to self-care, the way Obi-Wan is," Mace says dryly. "Probably good for our future as a married couple," Cody says. "I think Pons would space me if you didn't take some care of yourself." "Pons already relishes having you to use as an excuse to make me stop working," Mace says, resigned to his commander's efforts. Ahead of them, the path curves out, stretching into a wide field that looks like it once would have held speeders. He glances around, but doesn't find any. Still, the open space makes it hard for anyone to sneak up on them, and he raises a brow at Cody in question. "Along the wall?" Cody suggests. "Over there looks mostly dry." Given how much water is trickling down the other walls, Mace will gladly take mostly. He takes a step, The world shifts, sharp, wrenching. May staggers before he can catch himself, foot skidding on a loose piece of stone, and hits the ground hard on one knee. The smell of burned flesh is immediate, making him recoil, and he feels his hand slip out of Cody's, hears the hum of a lightsaber igniting, and twists to his feet, his own lightsaber coming up to his hand automatically as he takes a sharp step back. He can't see Cody. All he can see is the Coruscant Temple, blaster fire burned into once pristine walls, the bodies of younglings scattered across the floor. Too many bodies, and horror surges in a chilling wash, making Mace's breath tangle in his throat. Darth Nostrum, standing in the center of the carnage, stares at Mace with wild eyes, teeth bared. "Don't you see?" he taunts. "Don't you see it, Jedi?"
"I see illusions," Mace says. "I see a ghost who doesn't know how to die."
Nostrum laughs like that's the funniest thing he's ever heard. "I did die," he says. "I died because I was too skilled, too smart. Vitiate knew. He knew I wouldn't make it out of my own citadel." The Sith Emperor, Mace thinks. Ancient, terrible, almost immortal, and always cruel.
"You built this citadel," parsing out the meaning, "and then he had you entombed in it."
"Locked behind my own defenses," Nostrum laughs, and his lightsaber trembles. "Just like you will be, Jedi." He turns, looking around them, and laughs again, ragged like he's spent too long screaming for his voice to survive intact. "Do you see this? I do." The temple. It's an illusion, Mace thinks, but Nostrum is a ghost. Maybe he can enter it just as well as reality.
"The temple," he says, cool. "But it will never happen."
Nostrum grins at him, all teeth and terror. "It will, Jedi," he says. "You see things, but not just illusions. This is the future." Horror curls, cold and sharp as a blade in Mace's stomach.
"No,"
he says, knows without hesitation that he'll die to keep it from coming true.
"The future isn't settled yet. It is only a possibility."
"It won't matter," Nostrum says carelessly. "You won't survive to make it back to the surface. No one ever has." His face twists into a rictus grin behind his beard, and he laughs, spreads his hands. "Not even me, and I built it." With a curl of power that vibrates wrong across Mace's nerves, the smoke from the torches curls, spills downward, and thickens. It hits the ground like a tangible thing, drags itself up on shifting arms and legs, dozens of ghosts made of black smoke and fiery eyes, and they reach for Mace with grins that echo Nostrum's, wicked and ghoulish. Mace steps back, raises his lightsaber, and freezes, realization striking. He can't see Cody. Any one of these could be hiding him, and Mace wouldn't know. Would cut him down and never realize until the illusion breaks. He can't risk it. And then, out of the billowing smoke, there's a cry. Mace turns, instinct bringing his blade up on one quick jerk, and a red blade collides with it. In the same motion, Mace shifts hard, leaps up and over, and drops down behind Nostrum. Sees the shatter point, a nexus of strong threads that meet up in one fragile tangle, and drives his lightsaber down at it. A blaster bolt knocks the blade right out of his hands. There's a shout, but Mace can't tell where it's coming from, whose voice it is. He turns. Nostrum laughs, wild, and his lightsaber drives straight through Mace's shoulder from behind. It very nearly doesn't hurt, and the darkness that follows is a relief.